Hey, Alexander, how you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a beautiful day again in London. We've had a spell of beautiful weather, and my dogs are dropping their fur all over the place. So my house is piled up with it, and my Dyson vacuum cleaner is conked out under the stress. But there you go. It's great to have, it's great to be have a beautiful day in London and be here again answering questions. I mean, that's perfect.
Cool. Valley S opens it up with a $20 super chat. Thank you,
Oh,
Valley S.
wow,
Hope you're doing
excellent.
well in Ohio. I believe it is Ohio. Hope everything is going well in the United States. Hello to everybody that is joining us from Italy, from where else? Where else are people joining us? I saw Italy in there. I saw Italy in the house. I see DC is in the house. We got quite a few people here. London is calling, Nigel, and Denmark is calling, and Serbia is calling, and the great city of Toronto in Canada is calling. All right, Perth, Chesterfield, Philippines. Very cool. Virginia, USA. All right, I went to school in Virginia, Alexander. I went to
Oh,
college
wow.
in Virginia. Yeah.
I've heard it's a beautiful state, by the way.
It is a beautiful state. Really is. Really is. California, Sweden. Aussies are here. Cool. Scotland. All right. Melbourne. Melbourne. We've got a video coming up on Australia. Hopefully next week we'll have it up on the air. We got a video on Nigeria that I just put up. I put up a video of yours, Alexander, literally 20 minutes before we went live on the Zelensky and NATO. Really good. Man, he is panicking. He is panicking, isn't he? Jeez, my God, I don't know if I would want to be Zelensky at this moment in
No, I
time.
wouldn't at all. No.
Yeah. Hello, Alan. How are you doing? Let's see. Kiwi in the house. Helsinki says hello. Texas, cool. Alexander, let's go over the news. Let's talk about what's going on. We'll take questions from you guys in the chat. I'll go through the chat and I'll just try to see if I can grab some questions out of the chat. And if you guys want to send us a super chat, that's appreciated. Of course, we'll answer the super chats as well. But this Friday, we'll just have another general discussion on the news. There's a lot going on. So, Alexander, before we get to the news, hello to everybody in China as well and in England as well. Oh, England, that's a good jumping off point. We have the G7. We had this agreement between Biden and Boris Johnson, though I don't quite understand it,
Nor
to be
do I.
quite
Nor do
honest.
I. I don't think anyone. I don't think anyone.
Boris Johnson penned some piece as well about this, like we're coming out of World War II and we got to build back better, of course. And he threw those typical words out there. I don't know why he wrote that either. We got the master troller, Trump, in the house. Trump just obliterated Biden. He obliterated the deep state. He talked about his meeting with Putin. Wow. He also put out a statement about Fauci, and he called Fauci, what did he call him? Dr. Fauci likes to say he's science when in fact he is merely science fiction. He's the master troll. I mean, I imagine heads are exploding, absolutely exploding after those statements. So, Alexander, real quick, what are you looking at? What are you reading? And then we'll get to questions from people in the live stream and in the chat. Very quickly, hit that like button, everybody. Go to Alexander's channel, go to my channel, go to the Durant's channel. We are on YouTube, we're on Odyssey, we're on BitChute, we're on Rumble, we are on Super U. Check out Super U, awesome free speech video platform, Super U. The link is down below. And go to our locals page as well, where you can also share your news and your stories to the Durant community, Alexander.
Well, I suppose one should be looking at the G7 summit and the NATO summit and all of those things. But I think you put it very well, actually, when you said, Johnson and Biden, this joint statement. I couldn't make any sense of it. I mean, it was so, it's so empty of any real meaning anymore. What we have is a situation now where cliches have become so important in language, in political speech, that they've driven out content. I mean, it's one of those extraordinary cases where even I was scratching my head trying to work out what it actually means. Because to be straightforward about it, I don't think it means anything. I think that's either going to be the whole story of the G7 summit. Now, we did a program just a short while ago, which came out yesterday, about how behind the scenes we've learnt that the US and the administration are really putting the pressure on the British over EU, over the relationship with the EU. That is real. That is actual news. That is something of substance. It's something, you know, that's important. Of course, that's not what we're talking about. We're supposed to be talking about all this hot air, and hot air it really is. I mean, you know, we're having a heat spell here in London. Well, it's probably because of all the hot air that's spewing out of Cornwall at the moment, because I truly couldn't make out what this statement meant or what it was intended to mean. And I'm pretty sure that foreign ministers around the world are going to be, and analysts and intelligence officers are going to be scratching their heads trying to work out what it means.
Now, maybe it's distraction. In order to take away from the real pressure that's being put on from the US, maybe this is just kind of like to show that there still is that special relationship while behind the scenes, like you said, it's a different story.
Well, that's exactly what it is. I mean, it's an intent. It was basically, I suspect, sold to the Americans by Johnson in order to give the impression that, yes, we're still the greatest of friends. We're these tremendous allies. Everything between us is fine, even though behind the scenes, all kinds of pressures are there. Mind you, that information that we discussed in that video, which came out yesterday about the US piling on the pressure to Britain over the EU relationship, that's not been widely reported here. We've got, I mean, it's authoritative reports in the Times and in the Telegraph. But if you go to places like, you know, the Guardian, the BBC, you won't see much about it. Instead, you'll get all this flannel, you know, as we say in England, which is, as is utterly meaningless, but it does give the impression that, you know, we are somehow the best of friends. And of course, you have Biden saying all sorts of things to the Queen about, you know, how we all miss Prince Philip and all that sort of thing. But it doesn't actually mean anything. And in fact, you could almost say that the fact that they're issuing these flowery, gaseous, you know, vacuous statements is a sign of how difficult things behind the scene have become.
All right, let's go to the live stream. Let's go to the chat. What do you think? What do you say?
See what people absolutely are saying? Let's do it.
I saw somewhere early on, I forgot who said it, but here it is. Asha, G7 is outdated, isn't it? ?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, when it was set up back in the 70s, when all these states came together, you know, the seven states, they between them accounted for, you know, 70-80% of world GDP. Today, it's about 30-40%. And you also look at the leaders today, and my goodness, I mean, they're completely inconsequential people. It's very difficult to take seriously. And it is completely outdated. I mean, there's the G20, which is where all the big powers come together. The G7 is just a bunch of friends of the US who basically all meet every year and pretend that they're important and issue these grand statements. And basically, the rest of the world pays no attention. And when Donald Trump was president, there was a lot of melodrama and a lot of fun. And we had all those photos of Trump sitting with, you know, with his arms like that, being glared at by Merkel and all the rest. And that was enjoyable. And that made it newsworthy. Now it's not even newsworthy anymore.
Yeah, Sleepy Joe there. Alan says, will Johnson stand up to Biden and the EU? Demonstrations in Northern Ireland are not reported in the mainstream media.
Excellent question, Willie. I don't know. I think he's in a very difficult position because, to be straightforward about it, he needed Donald Trump. He needed President Trump to get the trade deal done. What he's discovering is that he's now got an administration which doesn't really rate Britain very highly and doesn't think much of him. And he's finding it very difficult to make any real headway with them. At the same time, he is the leader of a country that has committed itself to an extraordinary degree to this alliance with the US. And he knows very well that if he breaks with the US or seems to publicly quarrel with the US, there will be a lot of people in the, you know, the intelligence communities, where there's the Five Eyes Alliance, in the Foreign Office, in the Conservative Party, in wherever, who will be extremely angry and unhappy. So he's got to tread this line. On the one hand, he's got to keep the people, the Leave voters who voted him into power, he's got to keep them on side and happy. He's got to deal with the situation in Northern Ireland itself, which is deteriorating. And at the same time, he's got to somehow square this circle with the Americans. So he's a difficult fix. Now, Johnson is he's underestimated. He's quite a cunning character, and he knows how to sort of get himself out of a fix. He's done that before, but this one is a particularly tricky one for him, especially as I really do get the impression that this administration really doesn't like him.
All right, from Darth wants to know, what do you think the odds are that good old Boris backslides under pressure on Brexit? What are the odds for or against? If you were a gambling man, what are the odds?
I don't think he'll do it. I think that, well, I'm not exactly a gambling man, but I would have thought the chances of him doing it and remaining prime minister are minuscule. I think if he starts to backslide on Brexit, I mean, they're rather hardline pro-Brexit people within the Conservative Party and in the grassroots of the Conservative Party. And I think they would move very quickly at that point to try to oust him, because they are afraid, if no other reason, that Nigel Farage will come back, set up UKIP 3, you know, the Brexit party under a new name, and then they will have serious, serious electoral problems. So I don't think he's going to backslide. I think what's much more likely is that he will be removed. I mean, he is already facing plots from all sides, and I think that's a much more likely risk. So I don't think Johnson will change his position, but I think there could be a coup, and we could find ourselves with Prime Minister Sunak or someone like that. And that Prime Minister Sunak might take an entirely different line on EU relations than Boris Johnson will. So that's, I think, the more likely prospect, much the more likely prospect at the moment.
All right. Let's see. Lucky Whisper says, Denmark's decision to send migrants to Africa for processing is great, and I hope it shifts the Overton window across Europe. This is an interesting story. What do you make of Denmark all of a sudden?
It is on
immigration, especially after all the news that Denmark was making before this decision. I mean, it was making a lot of news.
If you know anything about Denmark and Danish people, it probably wouldn't surprise you. And it's interesting that they've taken this step. And I have to say that it's also partly reflects Danish feelings towards Germany, the EU and all of that, in the sense that they are in effect rebelling against EU policies, because the EU has always tried to run all of these policies as a group, which means in practice that Angela Merkel has up to now been making all the decisions. So it's a sign, I think, that first of all, I mean, it's a sign of Denmark asserting itself as a state, and I would be pleased about that. But it's also a sign that with Merkel departing the scene, with her power very severely weakened, countries are now beginning to rebel, if you like, against the combinat that runs the European Union. And this is a manifestation of it. So, you know, we could possibly see more of this with Merkel leaving the scene, departing the scene, and with Armin Laschet, her likely successor, doesn't seem to be the same, have the same kind of authority that she once did.
Yeah, probably Merkel may be pulling in Obama and controlling things behind the curtain.
Well, she will try to. I mean, that's very much her style. But bear in mind that Merkel is also an exceptionally ambitious individual. I mean, I'm sure she's already looking at her next position, which, you know, the head of the World Bank. Well, not the World Bank, the IMF. I don't know. I mean,
UN, yeah.
UN, whatever. I mean, we haven't heard the last of her at all. But it's not guaranteed that she will remain a figure in German politics. She might want, you know, to go on a bigger field. So we'll see what happens.
All right, Carl, what do you think about American threats and complaints over the Iranian warships in the Atlantic? Interesting story.
This is an extraordinarily interesting story. First of all, I think we need to keep this in proportion. I mean, we're talking about two warships, so-called. One is a converted tanker, which the Iranians have done a sort of lash-up job to make it into a kind of helicopter carrier. I mean, without being, demeaning, I mean, it's not a true warship in any serious sense. The other ship is called a destroyer. It's actually more like a small frigate. And yeah, so this is hardly an important or imposing naval armada. And one wonders what the Iranians are up to by sending it into the Atlantic in that way and talking about going all the steaming all the way to Venezuela. I mean, the idea that the US fleet is going to be intimidated or nervous about it is just absurd. But it is the Iranians asserting themselves. And perhaps a more interesting point is that all of this is coming at exactly the moment when the negotiations in Vienna to sort out the JCPOA seem to hit a roadblock. The Iranians appear to be digging in. Blinken has issued a really panicky statement, which says that if they can't sort it out, the JCPOA, then the Iranians could be in a breakout position with nuclear weapons in a matter of weeks, which is an extraordinarily panicky thing to say. And of course, looming over everything, we have on the 18th of June, I think it's the 18th of June, the Iranian presidential elections, where it's widely expected that a hardliner, Ebrahim Raisi, is going to be elected president of Iran. And he looks not just a hardliner, but a rather strong personality, actually. So the pieces are moving, if you like, and it could be that this move of these warships is intended to send some kind of a signal. Not a signal I entirely understand, by the way, but at least it could be a sign from the Iranians, that they can, if the US wants to send warships into the Persian Gulf, then the Iranians will send ships into the Atlantic and maybe all the way to the Gulf of Mexico and Venezuela. Though, as I said, it's hardly a threat. I mean, really, amongst the great power navies, this isn't really a naval armada to speak of at all.
Yeah. From Mark Hewitt, if you were married to Kamala Harris, would you wear a mask to kiss her? I would wear a mask. If I had to kiss her, I would wear a mask.
It's a very simple answer. I wouldn't be married to Kamala Harris. I mean, I absolutely, I mean, that is impossible. And it is impossible that I would kiss her under any circumstances. So a mask or otherwise, I'm sure, by the way, that she would reciprocate. I'm sure she wouldn't want to kiss me. So that question just doesn't exist.
Thank you
But
for that
there you
super
go.
chat, Mark.
There you go.
That's a great question. From Hunger, $5 super chat. Any plans for a weekend call-in show? I feel discriminated against and identify as a 9-to-5 employed person. Yeah, we'll get a call-in show over the weekend. Yeah,
I think it's a good idea, actually.
Let
I
me
think it's a
get
good idea.
back to Cyprus and get better internet. And in a couple of weeks, we'll get that together, Hunker, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Alan wants to know another interesting question. Should England footballers take the knee in their match on Sunday? We have the Euro football
No.
match, the Euro coming up. Should they
No,
take a
I
knee? People
no.
aren't, I don't think people in England are very happy in
No,
general about the knee, are
they're
they?
not ha they're not happy about it. And I mean, I think again, this is something that's been imported into the UK from the United States. I think people are not happy about it. Opinion polls basically show as much. And there were examples of people being heckled when it happened, cases of footballers being heckled when it happened. So I think they shouldn't do it. I think it's inappropriate. I think it's wrong. I think you keep politics out of sport, and certainly we shouldn't do that because of something that's happening in another country.
I got, yeah, I got a problem with the UK that maybe you can answer my question, Alexander. Boris Johnson, I don't know if it's really Boris's fault, maybe it is, but they introduced a COOF passport for Wembley Stadium so that people can enter. I think it'll be 22,000 fans they'll allow in, but you have to have a COOF passport, or you have to have I believe they don't even take a regular PCR test, a different type of test in the UK anyway.
Oh,
they introduced the COOF passport, but in other places where they're going to be hosting matches around the UK, for example, Scotland, they're not requiring any of that. They're just saying social distance. Why? Why is there? What's going on? A little tricky that they did for Wembley, isn't it?
It is extremely tricky, but we are edging towards ever more of that all the time. I'm going to give you an example because I know this for a fact, that you now have to have tests and there's special test kits that are being sent out to people. You have to show test results before you visit a hospital. I mean, think of that. I mean, you know, I'm not saying obviously if you're, you know, emergency case, you know, you've been hit by a car and they put you in an ambulance, and presumably then you would be able to get. But if you're a regular patient and you have to visit your hospital on a regular basis, you cannot physically enter it unless you've got a test. And, you know, I know that because, I have personal reasons for knowing that. And I know that there are test kits to do that being distributed through pharmacies. So, you know, we're seeing this pervasively take hold. It's happening on an ever bigger scale. It's being heavily promoted by some people in the government. Don't think Johnson himself, but then Johnson was never very much on top of these sort of
things. Who would decide that for Wembley? I mean, I know it's in coordination with UEFA, but I'm trying to figure out, I'll get to some more questions, but I'm trying to figure out who's coordinating this, because you have some stadiums in the UK, which are saying just social distance and you can get in to see the match. And then you have a stadium like Wembley, the most famous stadium probably in the world, which is saying, nah, you can't get in, not even with this test or that test, or you need the passport. Who's making those decisions?
I would love to know the answer to your question. It's not always easy to say. I mean, the health minister is Matt Hancock. You might assume that he's in some way involved in this kind of thing. But it's quite likely that it's actually decided by someone within the permanent state, you know, the civil service. And that's where these kind of decisions are taken. A friend of mine was talking to a former Conservative cabinet minister some time ago, who he knows socially. And this person, he's a well-known political figure in Britain. He actually said that when he was in government, he was astonished at how many decisions are made without the knowledge of ministers. So, you know, I don't know how this particular decision was made, but I would not be surprised if it was made somehow in that kind of a way. Obviously, the Football Association will have played a part. Obviously, UEFA will have played a part, but it's quite likely, as I said, that it's been green lighted by somebody within one of the ministries. We might never even find out who.
Interesting. All right. Radar Barstad said salary today. Here's some for you. 50 at OK. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Thank you very much for that. And Liam says the untrustworthy don't deserve forgiveness, in my opinion. Would you or should you? Consider a sticks style divergence from mainstream social media. Okay, you mean like, so sticks does 4 videos, I know, and he puts 2 on YouTube and all 4 on the other platforms, Odyssey and BitChute and other platforms. We're kind of doing that in a way, slowly, but it's hard because, you know, doing the videos is one thing, but then uploading them to 4 or 5 different places takes a lot. Yeah,
bear in mind that there's just 2 of us. I mean, I don't know how much or how many people are helping him, but you know, we have to make our programs and do the programs, and then we have to do all of the various things that Alex said, and of course we have all the issues of connectivity that he was touching on at the start of the program. So we are steadily working in the direction that you said, but obviously it takes us time because we have to build up our mechanisms and our resources to do that. But, you know, that is the trajectory of travel, and we're not the only people who are going to go that way.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. Thank you for that. Super chat. Raul wants to know, here we go. Manjoy and Saint-Denis down with Macronism. Was what was uttered while Macron got slapped. Is something truly brewing in France to bring back a monarchy?
I don't think so. I mean, can I just say French royal, by the way, that phrase, this is what was said by the person who slapped Macron, Montjoie Saint-Denis. It's a royalist, or rather it's a slogan that became associated with royalism. And there is a royalist fringe in France. You do occasionally meet people like this, particularly, I should say, in the aristocracy. Parts of the aristocracy have never accepted the Republic. It's a strange thing to say, but France has an aristocracy and it's very snobbish, or parts of it are, and it keeps itself to itself, and it's very difficult to access, and it still doesn't accept the Republic. You find people like that. You also find a kind of royalist sentiment in parts of the intelligentsia. But I don't think that this has much traction with the great mass of the French people. And I certainly isn't something that, for example, Marine Le Pen has any interest in. She is a Republican. I mean, she's part of the Gaullist Republican tradition, which is what, in effect, she's defending republicanism in France being a nationalist thing. I mean, it's not, as it could be in some other countries. But and of course, the other problem, if you know anything about French royalism, is that there is no agreement amongst the royalists about who the King of France should be, because the French royal family became divided in the 19th century. And there's an Orleanist claimant who traces back his ancestor to Philip of Orleans and Louis-Philippe, who was king of France in the 1830s and 1840s. And then there is another more legitimist candidate who goes back to Louis the 18th and beyond. So there are, I think it's not going to happen. But the point about that particular slogan is that, of course, it's royalist, but it's also patriotic. And I think that is what these people were about. They were asserting French nationhood, French history against a president who they see as being hostile to both.
All right. GEC812 says offshore processing harsh, but worked for Australia.
Well,
Thank you for that super chat.
yeah.
Too. Thank you. Hope everything is going well in Australia. I believe you are in Australia, if I'm not
Yeah.
mistaken. And Anatoly says, Super Chat, can AfD make a strong comeback in Germany?
Yes, I think there's great opportunities for a party like this. I mean, it's difficult to convey how disaffected people are in Germany with the present state of things, and especially with the European Central Bank now printing money like almost on Weimarist levels, and with inflation rising to about 4% in Germany, which is very sensitive in Germany. Absolutely, there are lots of people who would be open to a party that offers an alternative. No question. Trouble is, for that to happen, the AfD needs to sort itself out. It hasn't done so. And realistically, expecting it to do so between now and the next election, which is in September, is asking a great deal. It's not impossible, as the election approaches, that you could start to see its support rise again because people are so disaffected. But it hasn't made good use of the last 4 years when it was the official opposition. And that, I think, has been a great tragedy for Germany.
Yeah. All right. Millie86 is a new member to the Dreyag community. Welcome, Millie86. Good to have you here. And Tim William wants to know, we wish all politicians would listen to the Duran in your intelligent commentary on world topics. Super chat. Thank you very much, Tim, for
So do
that.
we. So do we.
If only, no. If only Trump would have listened and gotten rid of big tech way early. All right. Simon, super chat. Is the World Economic Forum winning given Tim Pool was refused a mortgage? Well, that's interesting news. I did not know that Tim Pool was refused a mortgage. Was it because of his broadcasts, because of what he says?
Well, I
Is
think
are they winning? Are they winning?
Well, they're winning in small things and losing on all the big ones. That's how it seems to me, at least. I mean, you know, the fact that Tim Pool has failed to get a mortgage is very bad, and we should say so. But look at the way the world is turning out. I mean, the very fact that they're becoming so frantic about so many different things, the very fact that they're having to do all these small things is a sign that they're basically losing the whole picture. And actually, you know, if you go close to and you follow carefully what they're all saying, it's fascinating to see how that enormous swagger and confidence that they had 10 years ago, for example, has drained away. I mean, they've never really recovered from the twin shocks of 2016 when Trump won the election in America and Brexit won the referendum in Britain. That's already shaken them. And now they still feel that things are not going the way they expected. So, you know, they're obviously counterattacking in many ways. They're winning their little battles. Some of those battles which they win are not so little. But overall, I don't get the impression that they think they're winning. I think I get the impression that they are afraid that they are losing.
No, you know what's coming, Alexander? You can see it now. You can download the Celsius app. You can get loans literally within a day using Bitcoin and crypto apps. No approval, no paperwork, nothing. Mm-hmm. It's coming. I don't know if they have actually home mortgages, you know, based on crypto, but it's coming. It's coming. Maybe you're a year, maybe you're 2-3 years off, but you know, the banks, they're not going to have the control they used to have. That I can guarantee you.
I absolutely agree. And by the way, I'm wondering whether we're going to see banks functioning in the way that we used to, you know, we've known them to function. I mean, it seems to me that industry is now looking increasingly out of touch with modern financial and technological developments. And given how important it is to making this whole system work, that will make a radical change.
Yep. Let's see. Let's go to the super chats here. We have one from Ian. Any more news from Italy leaving the EU? And does Le Pen getting more power in France after Macron got slapped?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what the situation with French reactions to that slapping incident are. But still, it does overall look as if Le Pen is growing in strength and Macron is finding it increasingly difficult. There was a very, very interesting comment from Jean-Luc Mélenchon, who is the leader of the French left. And, you know, again, we must be careful when we talk about left in France, because left in France doesn't necessarily mean the same as left in the US does. The French left historically has been very nationalist, may not be so much anymore, but Mélenchon definitely represents the nationalist wing of the French left. He's very critical of the EU, for example. I say that, I mean, I don't know what his internal views are, but that's the sort of image he represents. Anyway, he has said that he expects the next French election, the presidential election next year, to be manipulated. Now, that's happened before in France, but the fact that he's talking in that way, it's a big statement, and it gives you some ideas about how tense the situation is becoming in France as Le Pen rises and as Macron falls and as the attempts to try and find an alternative to Macron have withered because there isn't anyone. Now, Italy is a different situation entirely. I had a fascinating discussion with some people from Italy just the other day. They were telling me about the sense of betrayal many people feel in Italy over the fact that Salvini went into the government with Draghi. But they also told me that the situation in Italy is deteriorating and that many people's disaffection is combining with many of its economic problems, and that there is also a perception within the country that, in fact, the state, the Italian state, may be in its last days. That's pretty radical. I mean, but it does give you a sense of how people feel in Italy about the situation. Now, we see the brothers have been growing in strength. They're a sovereignist party. we'll see how things turn out. But I got the impression talking to these people, I don't want to discuss them, who they are at the moment, but I got the impression that they don't think the situation in Italy is good at all. And they also gave me very much the impression that more and more Italians have come round to the understanding that if Italy is to survive, it has to break with the euro. Whether that's possible, whether given the nature of Italian politics that can be done, is another question. But they see it as an existential issue that either Italy does it or it cracks. It breaks.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah.
That's a true statement. If Italy wants to survive, in many countries, if they want to survive, they need to break with the euro.
Yes.
It's simple.
Absolutely.
Not easy to do, but it's simple.
Yes.
All right.
But the time scale they were giving, which was a couple of, perhaps even months, a couple of years at most, was an eye-opener to me. I mean, they don't think that this situation is sustainable for very much longer.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Liam with the super chat says, can we please savor the slap for a minute? It was a loud slap. I mean, you could hear
it. Was absolutely. I think people are savoring it around the world quite a lot more than a minute, actually. And it's gone viral. I mean, in France, it's gone. The film of it has gone absolutely viral. Lots and lots of people have seen it.
Yeah, Simon, £5 super chat says many U.S. banks are refusing to lend money and accept new deposits. This is true here as well.
No, absolutely.
They're refusing to accept deposits. Yeah.
No, I've heard the same. Absolutely. We are in a very strange economic situation because economic policy is becoming extremely bizarre. By the way, I mean, I'm not a great fan of Deutsche Bank at all, but Deutsche Bank has issued a report recently in which they said that the US Fed has essentially taken leave of its senses. I mean, that was from Deutsche Bank, which is about as globalist an institution as you can get. So, you know, people are beginning to become seriously concerned.
All right. Wade sends us a $5 super chat. Thank you very much, Wade, for that. Let's see some more questions here in the from the super chats. Mark says German inflation rates are going up. How will this affect the German election?
Well, this is for me an excellent question. Now, it depends how quickly this happens. I mean, if we have already 4, 5, 6% inflation in Germany by September, then what we were talking about before, about, you know, potential comeback of the AfD, it seems to me is a real possibility. If they can keep inflation, or if inflation is below 4%, say it's around 3%, still a bit high, and still you will see parties, you know, adjusting to this. But at that level, I suspect it will help the CDU because they will say, you know, we're the business party, we're the party who are able to control this. The one party that will not do well from this is the Greens, because the Greens, of course, are very heavily identified with the agenda, the European integrationist agenda and the Atlanticist agenda that more and more people in Germany see as responsible for this. So inflation is always a very sensitive issue in Germany, but it does depend how high it goes before the elections in September. And September, let's remember, is just weeks away now. I mean, we're not very far from that point.
Yeah. From Raul, $10 super chat. Trump, quote, good luck to Biden in dealing with President Putin. Don't fall asleep during this meeting, and please give him my warmest regards. What are your thoughts on the meeting and its outcome?
Well, first of all, can I just say, I thought that was one of the most extraordinary statements that Trump has made. I thought it was incredibly funny. It was classic Trump and very, very witty. And I mean, it also actually took straight on the issue about whether or not you believed he believes Russia or the intelligence agencies over Russiagate. I thought that was a remarkable comment. And I'm just going to read what he actually said because I got it in front of me. As to who do I trust, they asked, Russia or our intelligence, and he put words intelligence in inverted commas, from the Obama era, meaning people like Comey, McCabe, the two lovers, Brennan and Clapper, and numerous other sleaze bags, all Russia. The answer, after all, that has been found out and written should be obvious. As Alex said, there are heads exploding all around Washington in the face of that. Now, on the subject of the summit meeting isn't going to achieve anything. It's quite clear to me, it's become increasingly clear to me, that Biden came to it with two issues in mind. Firstly, he needed to de-escalate fast a crisis in Ukraine, where he did seem as if there was going to be a big war, with Ukraine quite probably being destroyed. So he picked up the telephone, or he was put up to picking up the telephone in order to get Putin to agree to a summit, de-escalate, and to avoid that war. So that was one thing. That's already been done, if you like. And the second is an attempt to try to persuade the Russians to shift away from China. And the Russians have been issuing statement after statement that they're not going to do that. And in fact, there's been a recent interview which the Russian ambassador to China has given, which I've discussed in a video, in which he says the same thing. So in light of all of this, the summit has already failed. It hasn't achieved anything because from the US point of view, it can't break the alliance that's now emerging between Russia and China because it's too late for that. And the Americans apparently are not able to come to that summit with a coherent agenda. This is the thing that the Russians have been complaining about, that it's been proved impossible to pin the Americans down. So Putin's been issuing statement after statement that expect no breakthroughs, nothing much is going to happen, everything is going to continue exactly as it was before. So this is, if you like, a punctuation mark in a deteriorating relationship. It's not going to turn anything round. And the point about Biden, you know, needing to stay awake as he deals with Putin, who is, of course, a master of detail. Well, I think Trump knows what he's saying.
Yeah, that's for sure. An incredible statement, an absolutely incredible statement. Absolutely. All right. Super chat, Carmen, Alex, what do you think of the future of privacy coins like Pirate Chain? Will the U.S. banisters try to make crypto illegal? Could they succeed? Okay, so I'll answer the first part and I'll ask you, Alexander, about the legal, the banisters, if they can make crypto illegal. Will they succeed? I love Pirate Chain. I love Monero. I think Monero is very solid. It's got a track record, not financial advice, but Monero is great. Pirate Chain is great. My opinion, could the banisters succeed in banning crypto? Only if they blow up the entire internet. Which I don't think they will. But anyway, Alexander, do you think the lawyers are going to start getting involved in trying to shut down the crypto markets?
I think that would be incredibly difficult to do from a legal point of view. What is the basis for doing it? I mean, what legal basis is there for saying that people can't exchange things with each other via the internet if they want to do so?
I mean, obviously, there's political reasons, fiscal reasons,
but legal reasons? You're going to interfere so intrusively into what people do. Well, maybe we are heading there, but you know, that would be an extreme extension of the power of the law to do that. What I suspect they might try to do, and I have been debating this with myself, whether it's actually viable, but they might try to say that crypto is basically a vehicle for criminal activity, for terrorism, for that sort of thing. And they might try to extend the terrorist and anti-money laundering legislation in some way to cover it. But I'm going to say straight away, that would be, from a legal point of view, conceptually an extremely difficult thing to do, and to try to do it might impact on other forms of commerce that take place, because logically it's very difficult to see what distinguishes people, you know, going about their lives doing trades with each other if they want to do them, you know, in cryptocurrencies. Well, why should they be prevented from doing it? I mean, what is intrinsically wrong in doing something like that. If it were easy to do, if it were legally easy to do, I tell you this, they'd have done it. The fact that they haven't done it by now shows that it's not easy.
Yeah, whichever country doesn't get involved in crypto is going to be terribly behind. El Salvador, exactly. Bloom Boom says institutions are getting into crypto. El Salvador made it legal tender. Toothpaste is out of the tube. Absolutely. El Salvador and many countries in South America, Latin America, Alexander, are starting to follow El Salvador's lead. And one big country that is looking at it very seriously and probably should is Argentina.
Well, indeed. Well, can I just say, if cryptocurrencies start to become legal tender on a big scale, then that is going to be a decisive shift, because the one thing that is holding back cryptocurrencies, in my opinion, is precisely the fact that they're not legal tender. So you can't pay taxes in them, for example. But if you can start doing that, well, we are in a completely different world.
Yeah. Absolutely. And India also said that they, at first, about a year ago, they were saying they're going to try to regulate crypto. Now, they came out with a story just the other day where the government is also looking at how to make crypto not possibly legal tender, but make it more accessible. So toothpaste is out of the tube. Very well said. Yes. Blow boom. Panayotis. Yes, as patriotas. Hello, Panayotis. Good to have you here. Let's see. Simon, is the AfD infighting natural or caused by state actors? A politically threatening political party.
That's a very good question. An excellent question. I'm going to guess that there is an element of both. But of course, the AfD faces enormous pressures within Germany itself. I mean, bear in mind, we know that the BND, the German intelligence agency, has already classified it apparently as an extremist organization. So, I mean, you know, it would not surprise me at all if there are attempts to destabilize it. And that might involve various players who are basically introduced into it in order to do that. Or, you know, there are also other ways of doing things like that. So, I mean, you know, bear in mind, we've had all kinds of scandals across Europe. There was the one in Austria that we had a few years ago with the woman who turned out to be, who was claimed to be the daughter or the niece of some oligarch, and it turned out that she wasn't. And she met an Austrian politician in order to discredit him. We had similar things happen in Italy. We've had all kinds of things like that. And the AfD, I am sure, is the target for many of these sort of operations. But that doesn't change the fact that they themselves have not worked things out between themselves very well up to now. Maybe in time they will. I mean, you know, the thing to always understand about the AfD is that it's a bringing together of many different traditions within Germany. It originated, by the way, as a project launched by intellectuals, by some academics who were critical of the euro and who felt that policy towards Russia was wrong. So it was a very sort of intellectual, academic-minded party, Bismarckian party. And of course, it's got a more populist, more right-wing, more anti-immigrant side. But, you know, it's different traditions and they haven't yet gelled and consolidated. Perhaps in time they will.
All right. Let's take some more questions from Super Chat and I'll go into the live chat. Big up to GEC, Ed Tuvalies, for helping moderate the great GEC and the great Valies. Thank you very much for helping to moderate this this chat. We really appreciate it. From Basha B, 499, two things are happening. First, the plan, pandemic, a modern day Stanford experiment. This will be followed by hyperinflation to deliver radical change.
Well, the trouble with hyperinflation is that, of course, it's almost impossible if it gets underway to control. So if that is the plan, if there is a real plan to launch hyperinflation, then, you know, I can very easily see how it could blow up underneath underneath the seats of the people who are planning it. The only country where I know that hyperinflation was intentionally and deliberately used as a political weapon and was done so successfully is Russia at the time of the revolution, where Lenin's government during the Civil War, printed money, partly in order to cover its costs, but partly with the actual intention of creating hyperinflation in order to obliterate middle class savings. And there was even comments at the time, you know, that the printing press was the financial equivalent of the machine gun against the bourgeoisie. But, you know, that needed Lenin and the Bolsheviks and people with that kind of ruthlessness and intelligence and, dare I say it frankly, ability. You know, the Davos people don't seem to me to be quite of that caliber. So that's their plan. I can see that it could go horribly wrong for them.
All right, from Carmen, could the West possibly be rid of the deep state in the next 5 to 10 years completely? Could they face such huge reversals, or am I dreaming? Could we see the deep state gone in 5 to 10 years?
No, you're not dreaming at all. I think, on the contrary, the very fact that we're talking about it, the very fact that people now increasingly acknowledge, the very fact that it exists is bad for it, because, of course, a deep state functions most effectively when it operates under the surface. So the very fact that it's emerged, that people have seen its power and have noticed what it does, in a way makes it a target in a way that it wasn't before. And given the very strong democratic antibodies that exist in societies like, especially the United States, you know, that isn't a good position in a way for the deep state to be. But, you know, it ultimately, whether it survives or not in its present form, depends on us. I mean, you know, not just us, you know, here, but people generally. I mean, if we all organize, if we all support the right people, if we put them in power, if we hold those people we put in power into account, then we can do remarkable things. I mean, the Constitution is becoming increasingly tattered in the United States, but it is still there. The law is still there. If we work it properly, then, you know, we can do it. But of course, that means working hard, it means organizing, it means not giving way to despair, and it means being very focused on what your objectives are. And at the moment, none of that exists to a sufficient degree.
All right. Wade wants to know, if Netanyahu is put out to pasture, what effect shall it have on the JCPOA?
It's a very good question, actually. Now, of course, as of the moment when we're speaking, the JCPOA anyway hangs by a thread. Now, there are no discussions apparently underway in Vienna between the Iranians and the Americans at the moment. The next set of discussions are supposed to be happening on Thursday. That leaves a very small time window before the presidential election in Iran. Because what we don't know is whether Ebrahim Raisi, the man everybody expects is going to be the new Iranian president, whom everybody says is a hardliner, what his real attitude towards the JCPOA is going to be. And we've had this panic-stricken comment from Blinken that if they don't get a deal, then Iran is weeks away from being in a position to accumulate enough fissile material to make a nuclear bomb. So, I mean, it's all very high-stakes stuff. What role does Netanyahu have in all of this? I'm not really sure, because I don't think Israeli policy towards Iran is going to change, because I think all Israeli politicians, any Israeli government that forms, will continue to see the threat from Iran of a nuclear weapon as an existential one. And I think that Iran also remains deeply suspicious of the Israel remains deeply suspicious of the JCPOA. So in this respect, with respect to the JCPOA, I don't think Netanyahu's departure is going to make a huge difference. What it may make a difference in is in the larger conflict between Israel and Iran, because whatever you may think of Netanyahu, and I know a lot of people are very critical of him for very good reasons, no doubt, the fact always was that he was actually very risk averse. And though he talked sometimes in a very belligerent and aggressive way, he never actually launched an attack on Iran or let himself be provoked into doing so. A weaker leader in Israel might not be able to resist those sort of pressures. So we're just going to see. I suspect that with Netanyahu, it could very well be a case of, you know, be careful what you wish for. Lots of people wish him gone. Lots of people think that once he's gone, things will be more stable. I'm far from convinced that's what's going to be the case.
All right. Welcome, Spartan Warrior Queen. Good to have you here. No notification again. YouTube, what are you doing to us? All right. Good to have you here anyway. It's great to see you on the chat. The great Spartan Warrior Queen. Amrit wants to know, let me see this. Here it is. Italy tech industrial base is more advanced than Germany. It makes advanced machine tools, robots, and many other advanced machines and semiconductors, highest share for automotive. Germany depends on Italy for its car industry. Good statement.
Absolutely, perfectly good statement. I mean, I think there's a misconception many people have that Italy is some sort of, you know, mess. It's not a mess. It's a rich country. It's well organized. It's got advanced industries, very good companies, very well run companies. Its political system is awful. And there are aspects of its banking and financial system that are awful too. But the country has enormous underlying strengths. And before it joined the euro, it was doing actually very well. It was growing very fast.
Yeah. Blow Bloom, $20 super chat. Governments may be able to try and control the payment rails, but the real game is store of value. Hex is revolutionary. Look into it deeply. I, not financial advice, I love Hex. So thank you for that super chat, Blow Bloom. You're definitely right. Not financial advice. I love Hex. All right. Brian Berner, $5 super chat. Keep up the good work. Thank you very much, Brian Bloomer. Let me see if there's a couple more questions in the super chat, and then we'll go to the live stream and grab some questions from there, Alexander. Wade. Wade, do you think the U.S. will attack the oil cargo to Venezuela? If so, what do you think this will lead to?
No, I don't think they will attack it, because I think, again, the very fact that they're warships would probably be, I think that would be a huge escalation. And I don't get the sense that the US at the moment is looking for that kind of escalation with Iran. After all, they're negotiating with them at the moment in Vienna. Attacking Iranian warships isn't the way to facilitate negotiations. And if they're really worried that Iran is weeks away in the event that negotiations fail from putting itself in a position where it could build a bomb, well, even that makes that's an even greater reason for not attacking those Iranian warships. To be straightforward about this, I think this business has been about these warships has been a bit overstated. Like, you actually look at the fleet, the ships that Iran is deploying, they don't look very impressive. And I've heard stories about how Iran is shipping weapons to Venezuela. First of all, what weapons does Venezuela needs? It's actually been fairly well supplied with weapons by the Russians. I can't see what, you know, a couple of weapons smuggled on to relatively small warships are going to achieve. And secondly, when you look at this fleet, it's not really a big, decisive military game changer either. I think the Americans will be saying to themselves, this just isn't a big enough challenge to really be provoked into reacting over. Perhaps it might be the case that the Iranians want to provoke us. So why should we be provoked by something that ultimately doesn't make a huge amount of strategic difference?
All right. From Pilgrim Media, Fauci is doubling down. Will he survive? What a devious little comment he made there. If you attack me, you attack science. What a tool.
I mean, what an arrogant thing. What an arrogant thing to say. I mean, you know, I am Mr. Science.
Is there any doubt he's not scripted? Is there any doubt now that he is not scripted? with a comment like that. I think that is that was a PR, Madison Avenue advertising agency, New York ad agency comment that was scripted for Fauci.
What I'm going to say about Fauci, well, I mean, I've made my own feelings about Fauci very well known at all times. I mean, as I said, he's somebody who's not fulfilling whatever role he was supposed to be fulfilling as the president's advisor, science advisor, in any way that I understand that role should be performed by. But the thing about Fauci is that he has been there since almost as long as I can remember. I can remember him at the height of the AIDS pandemic back in the 80s. I mean, presidents come and go. Congresses change. Fauci is still there. And I would guess that when you're dealing with somebody who's clearly as well-planted as he is, that getting him out is going to be very, very difficult because he's probably got all sorts of allies throughout the bureaucracy and the science community and the pharmaceutical industry and all that who have an incentive to keep him where he is. And I'm also guessing that he's probably got an awful lot of information about all sorts of other people, which makes it unlikely that many people will want to take him on. It reminds me a little bit of J. Edgar Hoover, who was, you know, the sort of perpetual director of the FBI. And, you know, it was impossible to remove him because, well, to be straightforward about it, he knew where all the dead bodies were.
Yeah. All right. Fiona, $15 super chat. Thank you very much, Fiona, for that. Anatoly, people are slowly being prepped for lizard people. Yeah. Yeah, true. That's an interesting comment, but there's a lot of truth to that, Anatoly. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that super chat. Wade, is the JCPOA being held up because Iran is not trading in USD? That's an interesting comment.
It is an interesting comment, a very, very interesting comment. Of course, it's not trading in USD because it is under sanctions. But we now have a very strange situation because the Iranians basically say that they're not interested in going into the JCPOA unless the US lifts sanctions. The US says that it will only lift some sanctions. Note, it's only some sanctions. If Iran goes back into the JCPOA. Of course, Iran says we never left the JCPOA. It was the US that did. We've adhered to it, even if we are actually adhering to it in our own way, which others might not recognize as adherence. So it's a very strange game that's being played. And one does get the sense that it isn't really about the JCPOA anymore. It's about Iranian policy generally. And about the fact that Iran is doing many things that many people in the US, for good reasons and bad reasons, disapprove of. And one of those, no doubt, is the fact that it is working out different arrangements with other countries and is increasingly trading in other currencies.
All right, Alexander, super chat. Is Trump merely playing mind games with the Dems and has no intention of standing again for POTUS? Will he end up backing someone like DeSantis?
If I knew the answer to that question, I would be a very rich man because I would be able to trade it. There are lots of people in Washington who are asking precisely that question. And that's exactly how Donald Trump wants to keep it. He wants to keep the whole political system, including, by the way, both the Democrats and the Republicans, in a state of uncertainty about what he's going to do. So I don't know. I mean, I truly, generally don't know what he's going to do. All I can say is, despite the fact that they've taken away his ability to work through mainstream social media in the way that he once did, he still knows how to game the system and to play it brilliantly and how to troll people. And he does it with immense skill.
All right. From Douglas, can Biden get Putin on side with the US and EU to bring down the global kleptocrats' headquarters? Perhaps the city of London.
Well, I think if that were the agenda that he came along to discuss with Putin, then, of course, Putin would be very interested. But, of course, that's not Biden's agenda at all. Yeah. Biden isn't interested in bringing down the city of London. Nobody in the West is, to be straightforward about it. No one in power in the West is. That's not the agenda here at all. So, I mean, Biden, remember, is somebody who came from Delaware and is very connected to the financial services industry, which is, of course, plugged into the City of London. Well, so, I mean, I just don't think that's part of the agenda at all.
Yeah. 10% for the big guy. Let's see. Flying Boar, I want Ukraine to get 90s-style shock therapy.
What is keeping Ukraine's economy going is the fact that there's this sort of revolving door of money that goes through it. And as the money goes in, that keeps the GDP figures sort of high, and the per capita GDP figures, not exactly high, but
it's not real. High,
but it's not real exactly, because of course it goes in, it comes straight out again. Yeah. And in the meantime, and this is, I was reading a report about Ukraine's economy, and I mean, it's really remarkable to what extent it continues to deteriorate. I mean, I will give an example, which is, of course, agriculture was Ukraine's biggest. It was one of the most solid things about Ukraine. Back in 1990, it produced 43% of meat production that Russia was doing. I mean, Russia, you know, was 100%. Ukraine was 43%. That's now fallen to 23%. It is in decline relative to everywhere, all the countries around it. And that isn't just a decline in terms of, you know, proportions. It's actually a real decline. So, you know, it used to build aircraft. It used to build gas turbines. It used to build ships, a big shipbuilding industry on the Black Sea. It used to build high-value products. It used to build, heavens knows, ballistic missiles and rockets. And all that is gone. And I was reading also that its high-tech industry that I'd heard a certain amount about is basically programmers working for Western companies in Kiev, adding very little actual value to the economy itself. So it's in a very, very bad way. But as I say, the revolving door of money that goes through keeps an appearance of an economy that is not actually declining as much as it actually is.
Yeah. Guys, we'll be doing the live call-in show. We'll do one on Monday, Alexander? A live call-in?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, we'll do the live call-in show on Monday of this week. So we will do the live call-in show on Monday. Yeah. Here, we're just keeping it open to questions and to conversation. James wants to know, Alexander, have you seen the film Rush to Judgment by Mark Lane?
No, I haven't. Mark, I mean, I haven't seen it. And I perhaps should do, but no, I haven't seen it.
Okay. Rush to Judgment by Mark Lane. Yeah. Okay, thank you for that. Super chat from Amrit. Japan leads in advanced semiconductor equipment and materials. USA cannot compete. No Intel chip without Japan.
Well, I'm not an expert on this field at all. I mean, this isn't something I know a great deal about. I have to say, the revelation that the US imports its high-end chips came as an astonishment to me when I found out about it, which is basically just a few months ago. The fact that it now imports chips from places like Taiwan, South Korea, Japan, I mean, that is not what I expected. I'd always assumed that the best chips were made in the US itself. So that is astonishing. And it does show the extent to which deindustrialization and de-technologization, if you like, has taken place in the US. And I wonder how, and I wonder why. Why was it allowed to happen in that way? I mean, it seems amazing to me.
Bill Clinton started it, I think.
Well, it was. I mean, that is exactly where it began. I mean, it began in the 90s.
Yeah. All right. Louis Tseng sends a $9.99 super sticker. Thank you very much for that super sticker. Wait, is it possible for you gentlemen to have Trita Parsi on your show? If so, can you make it happen? I don't know who that is.
Another
YouTuber, news personality, but I'll look the name up and we'll try. We'll try. We got some collabs in the works, and we'll start rolling those out.
We will indeed, yeah.
The next few weeks as well. So we got a lot of good stuff coming. Let me jump in. I think I've got every super chat. Yes, I have. Let me jump in the live stream, Alexander. We're answering some more questions, and we'll wrap it up. So let's see what people are asking in the live stream here. Let me go through and see if there's any questions here in the live stream or any comments. Take like a 30-second break. Guys, hit that like, everybody. Make sure to hit that like. I'm not sure how many likes we have now, but 634. Let's get that up to 750. Come on, everybody. Hit that like. Going through... there was a question on Greece and Serbia. Is Greece going to be recognizing Kosovo? Have you heard anything? I haven't. It's actually died down a little bit in the news here. Have you heard anything?
No, I've heard absolutely nothing. I think what happened was that somebody in the Greek government and perhaps one of the embassies was flying a kite to see how Greek opinion would respond. And I think they found that it was not very... it's favourable. But having said that, the very fact that they're flying a kite and that this story was circulating at all is a sign that it is on the agenda now. And, you know, we should be ready for this. I think it may not happen this year, but give it a year or so and we'll be there.
All right. War in South China Sea, yes or no?
It's not impossible. I think it's unlikely, but... the worry is that there may be a miscalculation with growing worries that the naval buildup that the Chinese are launching now is on a huge scale. There was talk that they were going to build 5 aircraft carriers. Now looks like it's 6. They seem to be preparing to... developing a special stealth fighter for their carriers. So, I mean, that looks like a direct challenge to the US position in the South China Sea. And the US has very unwisely, in my opinion, staked a lot of its prestige now on trying to control the South China Sea, or at least not control the South. That's not the right word, but at least maintain a kind of presence in the South China Sea, which, of course, is unacceptable to the Chinese. So somebody's going to have to back off at some point. It doesn't seem to me as if the Chinese are prepared to do that. And I think it's going to be very difficult for the US to. So though I don't think either side is preparing for war or wants a conflict, it's not impossible that some kind of a clash could happen. And on Taiwan, the Chinese have made statement after statement, which I think you should take completely seriously, that they reserve the right to take military action to bring Taiwan back under Chinese control. And if the United States interferes, it has a war on its hands. And I take that very seriously, and I think everybody should.
All right. Simon Ennifer says, please ask your multinational audience, are they seeing signs of inflation and shortages in their home countries? All right, guys. So in the chat, just put down if you're seeing inflation, yes or no, signs of inflation.
I am here in Britain. I mean, and I'd be interested to know that. But I can definitely see signs of inflation here in Britain. I mean, especially in food products. And I think that I'm hearing, you know, that things are happening in the same way in the construction industry. So I've no doubt that is the case here in Britain.
All right. Where am I here? Rainy Steps. Alex, what do you think of Theta? Not financial advice. Full disclosure, I do have some Theta. I like it. I like it a lot, but it has good. The one thing that worries me about Theta real quick is that a lot of big tech companies are involved in it, like Google. So that's a little bit troubling, but it's an amazing project. But that does trouble me a little bit. Thank you for that super chat. Where are we here? Flying Boar, I've read that Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia have better GDP than Russia. Is that true?
Well, better GDP in what sense? If you mean GDP per capita, possibly. But I would point out that they did also I mean, living standards in the Baltic states were much higher than in Russia during the Soviet era. So if there were that difference, it would not be completely surprising. But I'm going to say something else, which is that you shouldn't believe anyway what you read about nominal GDP in Russia, because in my experience, real living standards in Russia, I haven't been there for a couple of years now, but real living standards in Russia are significantly higher than the nominal GDP figures might lead you to think. And the other thing I've been hearing is that the Baltic economies are actually stagnating and might be actually going backwards, because an awful lot of the trade that used to pass through them has been redirected away. Certainly the activity of the Baltic ports has basically crashed. So yes, the Baltic states do have some residual strengths. Estonia is very good at IT, for example. I think it's the one country in the world where you get free internet everywhere. Lithuania has a well organized agricultural sector, so I hear, but I suspect that before very long, if not possibly already, Russian GDP would at least match it and probably surpass it. And if you're talking about Moscow, I'm pretty sure it surpassed Baltic GDP long ago.
Yeah, all right. Mm-hmm. Inflation up, food prices are going up, South Africa big time. Yeah. Ohio, inflation here in Ohio, Australia, yes, UK, yes, Scotland, yes, inflation, yeah. Barbados, yes, yeah. Australia, yes, absolutely, Canada, big time, food prices up, meat's gone through the roof in Australia,
well, there
housing inflation, Netherlands, housing inflation, Netherlands, what else, yes, food prices are up in Sweden. So all across the board in South Africa,
absolutely.
Up Toronto, gas and food is up. Food in Australia is on the rise, especially beef. Inflation in Toronto, yes. There you have it.
There you go.
Yeah, up all across the board.
Of course, if you listen to the Fed, it's all transitory, and China is going to save us because they are supposedly pursuing a deflationary monetary policy. I have to say, I find that one of the most hilariously ironic things of all, that we are going to depend on the Chinese to save us from the inflation that we are ourselves creating. I do wonder what planet some people are on.
Yeah. There was a question on inflation. I just missed it. Raul Pinto, yes. WSJ, Wall Street Journal headlines today: U.S. inflation is highest in 13 years as price surges 5%. Price surge 5%.
Well, if that's right, I mean, I haven't looked at the latest readout. I know it's coming. If that's true, 5% is, I think, higher than expectations.
They were hoping for 2%.
They were hoping for 2.1%, I think, is what they would say. But the worst figure I read was 4.3%. If the readout is 5, well, frankly, it's off the scale.
Yeah. All right. From Wade, do you think Japan's GDP will take a hit because of the Olympics and the COOF surge?
Yeah, I think it will. And I have to say, actually, about this, I'm sorry for Japan, but I don't think they've sorted. I don't think they've handled this situation particularly well, partly because I don't think they can make up their minds what to do about it.
They had the perfect opportunity to offload the Olympics. The perfect opportunity.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know why they've persisted with this. But, they will get a hit. They will definitely take a hit. By the way, speaking, as somebody who was born in the 60s, when I was, a child, we were all living in the afterglow of the great Tokyo Olympics of 1964. Which were one of the most successful and popular Olympics of all time. So it's really sad in some ways to see things go this way.
They had an opportunity to just say, look, we can't host the games, that's that. But
that's that.
I don't know why they persist on hosting it.
No,
it's really bizarre.
No, I don't. Absolutely.
All right. Marley says, $14.99 super chat. Alex and Alexander, I love your show. Hi from Oz. Why was Boris and Biden acting like besties after the U.S. threatened mutual trade over EU rules? Also, how is Biden attaining a normal presence? Oh, that's the second question. Is I wish I could answer that as well.
That is a good question.
What are they?
But I think we answered the first question at the beginning of the program. I mean, the fact that they're going out of their way to appear the best of friends is almost certainly a sign that things are not actually that good beneath the surface, because they would need to go to that, to those lengths, if there was a really strong relationship there. So that's the impression I get. You shouldn't be fooled ever by outward appearances, and that statement, that that all these statements that are coming out, well, as we said at the start of this program, I mean, I can't make them out, and that's my job. My job has been to analyze statements and to try and figure out what they mean. I can't even work out what this one means, because it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, pure distraction. Pure distraction. All right. Let's see. Simon had a question here. Let me grab it. Where is it? Inflation. Here it is. Inflation is now above the levels that lead to the Arab Spring. It's going to get sporty. You might be right.
I mean, this is a point, by the way. We've done two programs recently on Colombia and on Nigeria, and in both of them, we've discussed how inflation led to the Arab Spring. The rise in food prices was one of the contributing factors that caused the Arab Spring. And you're absolutely right. And now it's higher than it was then, and just as it was partly caused, in fact, largely caused, in my opinion, by QE way back at that time. So it's caused by this monetary fiscal explosion that we're seeing now. And it's going to result in large amount of political instability around the world.
AP, can you put your question in the live stream just so I can grab it?
Yeah.
Come on, mate. How about my question? I'm looking for it. I'm looking for it, man. Put it in the stream and I'll grab it. No. In the meantime, from Didapong, the Wuhan lab was outsourcing of gain of function work in the West after SARS CoV and multiple leaks at West Tier 4 labs. Convenient for wrapping any problem around China's neck if things go wrong. China wanted gain of function expertise.
Well, very interesting. This is one of those things that I never heard of gain of function until a short time ago. And, so much to say and know about over this and what was actually going on in that lab, what was actually going on around the world. And the most interesting thing of all, of course, is the fact that all of these people were all around the world. When I say all these people, Fauci, all those people close to Fauci, we're working together. this is something that really astonishes me, actually, that they were engaging in all this kind of manipulation. Money. Well, obviously,
money,
absolutely,
money. Alexander, AP's question is right here, Alexander. It's a good one. Trump returns. Your opinion? Does Trump return? That's the million-dollar question.
Well, absolutely. As I said, I wish I did know the answer, because it would be worth $1 million if I could answer that question simply and say he's definitely on back. Then, of course, as I said, he's coming back in 2024 or 2022 or whenever. As I said, lots of people.
I think you're right. You said the magic word. I think I'll give you a quick answer. I think he's waiting. I think we will have a better indication in 2022 after the midterm.
I agree.
Even Trump may have a better indication.
I agree. But the important point about it is that despite all the attempts to silence him, he's still making the political weather. I mean, he's able to do it simply by, making these Delphic comments, and everybody, is hanging, trying to work out what they mean. It's a masterclass in political teasing.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking before we went live? In a way, it is a masterclass. In a way, I kind of say I wish Trump didn't say anything, because whenever he gets out there and he says these things, it just feeds the mainstream media, yeah, and it gives them material and it gives them work and it gives them ratings, because they are really doing bad without Trump. I mean,
absolutely.
CNN's ratings are just collapsing. But now, you know, when Trump says stuff, all of a sudden, you know, they have stuff to talk about. So I'm kind of torn. On the one hand, I love, you know, reading Trump's statements, and it is a masterclass in trolling. Yeah. But on the other side, I'm like, oh man, the less Trump talks, the more we see the mainstream media collapse. I don't know.
I agree. Just a thought. I agree.
Just a thought out there. Okay. I think we got all the super chats, Alexander. What do you say? 5 more minutes. Look at the live stream. See what's going on.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
Let's see. A super sticker from Dennis. Thank you, Dennis. DeSantis for president. DeSantis is a pretty cool guy. He's done a good job in Florida, that's for sure. Mm. Without them, they have nothing, says AP. Yeah.
Mm.
You know, they are struggling without Trump. You could see it.
Yes.
They a lot in Trump, the mainstream media, a lot.
Mm, absolutely.
Bashing Trump. But anyway. Let's see what else is in the stream. GEC says, hit that like button. Hit that like button. Raphael says, Alexander is wrong. Inflation has nothing to do in Colombian trouble. We have a video coming out this weekend where we get more in depth. I don't think you were saying that it was inflation is part of what's going on around the world.
Exactly. Yeah. The point we were making was that we're having protests in Colombia and we're having protests in Nigeria. And the fact that inflation is coming is going to make protests like that even more widespread, because it's going to put pressure on living standards. So in a country like Nigeria, in a country like Colombia, where which are already volatile, is going to make them even more volatile. And we're going to see more and more of that around the world now.
Yeah. We'll have the Colombia video out over the weekend.
Yes. Yes.
We'll have that out there. Flying Boar, update on Nord Stream 2.
Yeah, I mean,
almost done, isn't it?
I mean, Putin said a few days ago that it was, you know, that they'd completed the first spur, and I think a lot of people misrepresented that to mean that it's actually done. But what he basically said was that it would be finished in August, and that there's nothing now that can prevent it being built, and I think that's absolutely right. The Germans, by the way, have issued statements about Nord Stream 2 today. One is that they're going to try and find ways to keep Russian gas flowing through Ukrainian pipelines post 2024, when the existing contracts run out. That is a sign that it's far from guaranteed that Russian gas will continue to transit through Ukrainian pipelines post 2024. And the other thing the Germans said today is that the question of Ukraine's NATO membership is not on the agenda. So Nord Stream 2 is done. And it seems to me increasingly Ukraine is yesterday's story as far as countries like Germany are concerned.
All right. From Isis Andy says, Ireland locked down for a year, acquiescence to the EU, the rollout of the vax, Northern Ireland border crisis. Yeah. Is Ireland heading back into trouble?
Yes, I think it is, actually, because, I mean, first of all, I should say that for Ireland, Britain leaving the EU is a blow. I mean, given how tightly integrated the two economies are, the fact that Britain is no longer in the European single market is a problem for Ireland. But going beyond that, there is obviously all sorts of things happening. You've now got the pressure from the US administration on Ireland to increase its taxes, its corporate taxes. I wonder how the Irish are going to feel about that. There are the problems in Northern Ireland. There's also the problems of the pandemic that you talked about. I think Ireland, which has been doing very well economically for some years, is going to find itself in increasing problems, and be interesting to see how they cope with it, if they can, because to be straightforward about this, the political class in Ireland doesn't look very convincing either. I mean, I wish I could say that it looked convincing in any Western country, but it doesn't. And it doesn't look convincing in Ireland too.
All right. Update on Idlib and Syria from Flying Boar. And we'll wrap it up. So,
right.
Idlib and Syria.
The interesting thing about the interesting story about Idlib is that Jabhat al-Nusra, which is the al-Qaeda franchise, which basically is the dominant force in what's left of Idlib, because, I mean, a lot of parts of Idlib have now quietly slipped under Syrian government control. Anyway, Jabhat al-Nusra, which now calls itself something else, by the way, I mean, it changes its name repeatedly, has apparently been carrying out a purge, and it's been rounding up people across those areas of Idlib, which is still under basically jihadi control, whom it calls Assad supporters. So they seem to be running into more resistance, because that's the only ultimate explanation for this. And it seems there's, and also attempts by jihadi groups in Idlib to engage in recruitment drives. When I say recruitment drives, I mean that actually means going to villages, rounding up the young men and conscripting them, because they're running out of men. So one gets the sense increasingly of a movement that is quietly fading away. I understand that in practice, there's just a few settlements around Idlib city, which is still under jihadi control. There's Manbij, and there's also a couple of settlements along the border. And day by day, quietly, the Syrian military is extending its control. So it's probably not going to come in a big bang, but it's gradually fading down.
All right, let's do a quick scan of the chat and we'll wrap it up. Simon says Ireland, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg are screwed. That's what the tax situation. Yeah. Throw Cyprus in there too, by the way. Let's see. James says, I thought Ukraine had international borders. Ruby says, have you read a super chat from Ruby's 200 says, have you read General Chihao Chan's speech in 2005? We got that same question last week.
Yeah, we did. And I haven't actually, but, you know, we should do, I suppose. I haven't read it. Yeah. Let's make a note of doing it actually. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that. We will make a note of doing that because we got the same question last week. Ivan says, "Hi, Alex. Will you go to China? It should be interesting to hear your opinions on China. You've been to China, so
I have been to China. Absolutely, I was very impressed by China. Actually, I'm impressed both favorably and not. I mean, on the one hand, the sheer scale of economic activity in China is just awesome, and one has to also say the pervasive way in which the technology works there in China is remarkable. I mean, you know, internet shopping and that kind of thing operates on an entirely different level from the way it does in the West. And so that was hugely impressive. And I also have to say this, I must say it, I got the impression that the Chinese population is relaxed and supportive of the government at this time, because they appreciate the enormous rise in living standards that they've gone through. So I saw all of that. And I also saw the other side, which is pervasive surveillance and very strong control. And a lot of that in ways which I would find, you know, very difficult to live with. In fact, I wouldn't want to live in that kind of world. So on the one hand, I was impressed by the undoubted economic achievements. And at the same time, I was also impressed by the pervasive controls and the sense to which the Chinese government really does run things in a very, very aggressive way. And I would not want that to be the future anywhere. So those were my overall impressions of China.
All right. AP comes through with $38.99 super chat. Thank you very much, AP, for that. Amrit, super chat. American policy is about Italy down, not Germany, and Russia out. That's an interesting take.
That's certainly an interesting take. I mean, again, the Italians I was speaking to told me about the enormous extent of US bases and military intelligence infrastructure in Italy. And they said that it actually exceeds considerably that in Germany also, and that this has been a long-standing thing, and a lot of Italians are aware of it, and many Italians have gone along with it, but more and more Italians are unhappy about it also. I didn't know anything about that, to be honest. It's not certainly something you notice very much when you're there. I mean, it's not like in Germany, for example, where you see American bases and you see American troops, and in South Korea, where I've also been to, where you see the same. If the Americans are more discreet in Italy, but it seems they're there in a big way. And again, the view that I heard was that they have a very pervasive influence on a lot of the politics there also.
All right, 1,000 likes. Good job, everybody. Thank you very much. Really appreciate it. Final two super chats from Flying Borg. German Green Party. I don't want to see them anywhere near the office. They are neocons.
I totally agree. I did a program about that, by the way, on my channel. And it seems that more and more Germans, the more they learn about the Greens, are cooling on them too. I mean, they did a disaster. One of them, went off to Ukraine and put on a flak jacket and a helmet and talked about arming Ukraine against Russia. And that didn't go down well in Germany at all. But, apart from that, I mean, the whole policy is such that it combines ecological ideas, many of which are utopian, with extreme program for European integration in a way that, again, it's beginning to go against the tide amongst German opinion. So I wouldn't want to see them anywhere near power, and I don't think they will get anywhere near power.
All right, and final super chat from Flying Boar. Update on Belarus. What's the update on that Pratasovich guy?
Oh,
he's worried he might be sent to the Donbass, and I would be worried about that as well, Alexander.
Oh, I would be. But anyway, he's talking. He's been on television. He's giving up. He's giving everything away. I mean, he's, of course. You hear people say that he's been tortured and forced to say all the things that he says. I have to say, I got glimpses of it. He didn't look like that to me. But then, what do I know? But I mean, he's certainly talking. I mean, he's talking lots, and he's giving away all sorts of things about how the Belarusian opposition works, the extent to which it was controlled, all those sort of things. And essentially, he is confirming or providing corroboration about the coup, which we heard so much about a few weeks ago, the attempted overthrow of Lukashenko. So he's quite active. The big story about Belarus at the moment is that, with all these sanctions that are now being imposed on the country, it seems to be the West has essentially given up completely, hoping that Lukashenko is going to be overthrown, and they've completely given up any idea of winning him over. So they're sanctioning him all over the place. But of course, all that's doing is it's making him get closer to the Russians, than he would probably want. And he had this extraordinary summit meeting with Putin in Sochi, and they even went out swimming together. Remember, they're not good friends. So one gets the sense that Belarusian industry is becoming increasingly integrated into the Russian industrial complex. And that, I would have thought, was the opposite of what the West wanted.
Yeah, they've closed off all airspace in the EU. The EU Council had a meeting. They closed off all airspace to Belarus airliners. Yeah. I saw portions of that interview with Bratasovich Alexander. He looked very calm when they were asking him questions about the Ryanair incident and the protests and that. The minute they started asking him questions about being extradited to the Donbass to face war crimes, that's when he lost it. I mean, he completely broke down. It was really, I don't know if he felt guilt or remorse for participating in the civil war. I don't know, but he really broke down there. I mean, he broke down crying.
Absolutely. I mean, I agree. I mean, I didn't get the impression that he was answering under pressure, but I do get the impression that he's very afraid of being extradited to Donbass. So that's what really scares him. And I suspect that if there is any kind of pressure being brought, it's he's cooperating with the Belarusian authorities because he doesn't want to be sent to Donbass.
Yeah. He also made an interesting point, and we'll wrap it up on this point during the interview, where he did say that he was fighting. Well, he had kind of they had a falling out. He had a personal falling out with with Tikhanovskaya and the people that were the main people that were running the protest. So I don't know, maybe he's hinting that maybe they threw him under the bus. I don't know. But, you know, that's what he's hinting at in a way.
He said
he did have a falling out with them on a personal level.
That would not surprise me at all, by the way. I do get the impression that this movement in Belarus is deeply factionalized. So that would not surprise me. But no doubt we'll be hearing an awful lot more. And, you know, before long, he'll be on some kind of trial, I expect. I mean, I don't know. We'll no doubt be hearing a lot more from him.
All right. Yosef, $10 super chat. Thanks for the truth. As always, God bless you both. Thank you very much for that. Robert Barnes loves you guys. He says you're always well ahead of the curve. Robert Barnes, Viva Frey, Robert Barnes, great locals channel.
Absolutely.
Great commentators, analysts, lawyers, Alexander Lawyers.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
And hopefully we're going to get something together with them. They're ahead of the curve. Great analysis from
totally
from
agree.
Barnes and Viva Frey. Yeah.
And can I just say, I mean, great lawyers too. And Barnes especially. I am somebody who I follow very closely for his legal judgments.
Yeah, they did. He did a great job during the whole 2020 election. Just an incredible job.
Yes.
And definitely highly recommend their work as well. Anyway, guys, we got it all. Thank you to GEC812. Thank you to Valley S, and thank you to Spartan Warrior Queen for helping out to moderate. The best in the business. Thank you very much for your help, guys. We really appreciate it. Thank you to all the questions in the live stream. Thank you to all the super chats. Alexander, final thoughts while I just go through the super chats and make sure I got everything. What are your final thoughts? What are you looking at going forward? Obviously, Putin, Biden.
Well, that's right. I know exactly. What else? I mean, I to be honest, I think the economics is the most interesting at the moment. I mean, inflation galore everywhere. Russia, by the way, put up interest rates today because their inflation has risen. And, of course, they can put up interest rates. Nobody else wants to at the moment. And I wonder how long that can be sustained for. So there is the big story of inflation. We'll see what comes with Putin and Biden. But to be straightforward about it, I don't expect very much. Certainly, I don't think we should.
I think it took us an hour and 40 minutes for the most important news of this stream, which is that Russia can put up inflation rates while the rest of the world is kind of sitting there scratching their heads saying, boy, oh boy, I just got a bad feeling about
Well, they run a problem. I mean, they are going to have a budget surplus this year. I mean, you know, because again, instead of, you know, printing money galore and financing vast fiscal expansions, they run a conventional economic policy, one that I recognize. But of course, in the West, what is it now? It's 15% GDP, a budget deficit of 15% GDP in the US in 2021. And apparently 2022 may be just as big. These are incredible figures. That's the sort of thing you see happening in a war, not in peacetime.
I wonder if that's why Boris Johnson makes pens articles like the one he did, isn't it? And that's why they come up with this new Atlantic charter, kind of to give that war, that post-war spirit, isn't it?
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's absolutely. It's interesting, by the way, just mentioning the Atlantic Charter. I mean, that, of course, was something that Roosevelt and Churchill agreed together. Well, the point is, of course, that Biden doesn't like Churchill. So, you know, why on earth conjure up that image? I mean, it's nobody doesn't like Churchill. I mean, you know, Biden, I don't know how strongly in touch with his Irish side he really is. Because the Irish don't like Churchill, and for very good reasons, by the way. I mean, he wasn't a friend of Ireland at all. So, I mean, you know, why bring up the whole business of Churchill and the Atlantic Charter and all that with someone like Biden? I know it's a misjudgment, actually.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. All right, Facebook is an addiction. Thank you, Alexander, to Greek Heroes. Thank you very much. Facebook is an addiction for that. Yes, Trita Parsi. I've made a note of it. We will look up Trita Parsi and see what we can do there. All right, Lindell, good to have you here. Thank you for joining us on the stream. Alexander, we'll sign off.
We will indeed.
Have a weekend. Back on Monday.
Absolutely. Wonderful program altogether.
All right. Great. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a great Friday and a great weekend.
Yeah.